talk about sort of an idea that we have to look for intrinsic beta decay using the imaging capabilities of detectors that mostly came from the work that we've done at UChicago with DAMIC. So I will talk a bit very briefly about the search for intrinsic double beta decay. I will mention how we detect particles in the imaging device. I'm very happy that Paulo was able to give the DAMIC talk earlier, so I won't need to go that in much detail. Then I will talk about something maybe you might not be familiar with, is just that selenium is a well-known photoconductor. That means that you can actually produce charge in selenium, you can apply electric field, drift it, and collect it. And that technology may allow you to make an imaging device that can look for the electron tracks from neutrino double beta decay. Then I will talk about a paper that we wrote, and it's in GINST, beginning of this year, which are a background estimate for a large CMOS amorphous selenium-82 imaging array and where you can, what background levels you can reach. And finally, I will present the first steps that we're taking in R&D to try to answer the outstanding questions that will determine if this technology is going to work or not. So here's a neutrino double beta decay. As you know, there is it's an interesting process. Violates a lepton number. And it can only happen if neutrinos are massive and Majorana. And the decay rate is related to a lot of different things. One of them is a neutrino mixing matrix and the masses. Usually we call this a neutrino Majorana mass, and this is in terms of sensitivity to new particle physics of your experiment. And then there are nuclear physics and kinematics that come into play. Okay, so here is just basically a schematic of the decay where you actually have the emission of two electrons, which carry exactly the Q value of the decay because there are no neutrinos to take the energy away. And you know, this is roughly the diagram where a neutrino is actually interacting here like a neutrino here and a neutrino. And then you just get the electrons out. So here is a picture of the parameter space. This was shown by Mark. And he showed very clearly that people are working very hard and very justifiably in trying to cover this region. But we took up the challenge to think, mostly in terms of background, could we think conceptually about a technology that might allow you to reach backgrounds of the order of 10 to the minus 6 per kilogram per year in a detector that could allow you, built, of course, large enough, to go all the way and cover a normal hierarchy, okay? And I think that most of the challenges, for different reasons, or most of the techniques that we currently have, really cannot, in principle, in terms of cost or just technical capabilities, make it to there, okay? So as you know, the strategy to look for neutrinoless double beta decay is related on different things. So first of all, you want a good enough energy resolution to tell the two neutrino double beta decay spectrum away apart from the zero neutrino monoenergetic decay. And also often you, mostly for the low background suppression, you want to pick a Q value for the decay that is as high as possible. So this is just the spectrum of a germanium detector running underground, and you can see all the types of radiation it gets from decays of uranium and thorium. And often these decays decrease very rapidly, especially after the famous thallium 208 line, so gamma ray at 2.6 MeV, and after this, the spectrum is quite clean, okay? So you want to get your Q value hopefully past this line in order to have to start with a low background rate, okay? And something that I will mention, this is something that was related in some sense to Mark's talk, is that not all isotopes are equal, okay? So the phase space factors are different, the nuclear matrix elements are different, and also the number densities vary. Mark presented it as being a factor of a few, but sometimes a factor of a few can make a difference, right? If your experiment is, if the ultimate experiment is $1 billion versus $5 billion, that might actually make a difference. And just for an example, if you take the same, for the same neutrino Majorana mass, the decay rate is about 2.5 times higher in selenium-82 than xenium-136, okay? So the strategy is to make a detector then can do something like this. Okay, so what you have is you have a nucleus that decays and emits two electrons. So here is a decay vertex. And if you could image these electron tracks with high spatial resolution to resolve the Bragg peaks at the end, you know these are two electrons based on where they end, then you can be able to have a lot of handles on the event and a very powerful background suppression based on the topology, okay? Mostly separating single electron from double electron backgrounds. And so what I would try to say is that if you get something that does very well, You know, what I'm going to talk is about a selenium CMOS active pixel rate to image. You know, with high resolution this track, you can actually get to background solder of 10 to minus 6 per kilogram per year. So what is the principle behind this? So this is just based on imaging detector, okay? So it's a very generic sense. All we have is a pixel array. And then under this pixel array, we have a thick photoconductor, okay? So this could be, say, silicon, like in DAMIC, or actually it could be selenium. So if you have an ionizing particle that travels through the selenium, it's going to produce electron hole pairs. And if you apply an electric field, you can drift these electron hole pairs to the pixel array and collect them. Okay. And what makes, you know, what I call imaging detector and not pixelated detector is because these detectors are not being continuously read out. Okay. So you take an exposure of some time, and exposure length is set by a handful of parameters. But if the exposure, you know, a relatively long exposure length, imaging detectors allow you to make readout that can be slow, can be non-destructive, and it gives you a bit of flexibility in the readout mode to achieve relatively low noise. Okay, so in ideally, you know, RCCDs, you can get few electrons in DAMIC, but also CMOS chips are used for photo detection, can already achieve a noise of only a few electrons. So this is just some pictures of the DAMIC particle tracks. You can see here, this is exactly what Paulo showed. You can see very well the difference between an alpha, electron, muons. And this only gets better at higher energies, right? I mean, in DAMIC, we care about these things called diffusion-limited events. These are hits that are limited by diffusion. That's interesting for us. But in the energies of the beta decay, what you care about are these MeV-scale electrons, which give you these very, very long tracks. And then you have this very clear black peak, so you can tell the endpoints. So you know, we knew that we could do this with DAMIC, right? And actually, it's kind of an obvious thing. People ask me many times before we come up with something sensible, could you use something like this to look for the topology of neutrino double beta decay? And the answer is yes. But of course, you cannot do it in silicon because there are no double beta decay isotopes. So you have to figure out some other way to do it. And you cannot use an inactive layer because, well, you can try to do the calculation. Very soon, just the thickness of the inactive layer is going to destroy your energy resolution. Okay, so you have to think about something else. So at that point, we started going over the literature, and we came about this idea, or these existing amorphous selenium detectors. These are selenium X-ray detectors that are used in medical imaging. They're actually large area because they're, I guess, made to scan relatively large body parts. You know, they're hundreds of centimeters squared in area. The amorphous selenium photoconductor has been implemented up to a millimeter thick, which is very nice. This is actually our dream thickness for DAMIC 1K. And the pixel sizes are quite small. These are 85 by 85 micrometers squared. Now, what you do is you operate these devices at high electric fields, which is about tens of volts per micrometer. And you get about the charge yield of about 50 electron hole pairs per kV for 100 kV X-rays. And one thing that is quite nice and helps a lot with scalability is that these detectors are a large band gap, amorphous selenium. So you have a negligible bulk dark current when you run these detectors at room temperature. Okay, and this is great for making something large because you don't have to cool it. Okay. Of course, you know, you could say, why can't you get just a bunch of these detectors in the experiment right now? And the answer is because the current technology for the medical industry has a noise of about 1,000 electron hole pairs. RMS noise per pixel. You would want it to be at least 100 times smaller than that. So here's just a picture of the existing technology. The pixel rate is built on a glass substrate, a TFT, kind of like a TFT display, a flat panel display. And what you do is you have the pixel structure on the glass glass substrate, and then you have you deposit about 1 millimeter of amorphous selenium on top, and then you put an electrode on the back. You apply an electric field, and again, all of the charge that is produced in the amorphous selenium is drifted and collected here. And then you have each pixel has some circuitry, and you can actually, you know, switch the pixel on and read its charge. Okay. So the idea is that you can actually, the idea was, if you want to achieve lower noise, then maybe we can use the functionality from the silicon industry and do a very similar structure, just instead of building it on a glass substrate and a flat panel display, you could do it on a silicon wafer with CMOS technology in order to achieve the lower noise that you would like. Okay? And another requirement that is important is that these things eventually to work, you need a pixel structure that is very thin. We're talking about less than 10 microns or so, so you don't have an active layer where you lose energy. By the way, anything you can make as thick as you can, these electrons will travel a multiple of these layers. So you want the layers to be small. So we thought about this, and we were writing a paper. And then of course, we learned that there are people in engineering, actually, people in the University of Waterloo who happen to be here, Professors Karima Levine, thank you for coming, who have actually done this, and they have implemented already a seamless pixel array structure with amorphous selenium superconductive layer. So this is a picture of one of their devices. They can do very neat things, basically the same type of pixel array design that you can do for a regular imager. And they've done this for small test arrays with 50 micron thick selenium with very small pixel sizes bound to 6 by 6 micrometer squared. Some read at most you get 20 electrons of noise and relatively low integration times. Okay, so this is low cost, is scalable if you can get this built in a current foundry, right? Foundries, they can produce about 40,000, tens of thousands of wafers per month. So if you could get it, you could get it with standard technology. You could build a lot of these pixel arrays if you needed to for a large detector. The other nice thing about selenium is the selenium 82 is a very high Q value, I mentioned, has a relatively long 2 neutrino half-life and has about 10% natural abundance. But one thing that is attractive to us when you talk about enrichment is that selenium can form many gaseous compounds. We're talking about selenium hexafluoride, hydrogen selenide, dimethyl selenide. And so it is possible that we can do isotopic separation by either centrifugation, which is quite expensive, or even by distillation. And actually, there is data already that suggests that you already have significant isotopic separation in hydrogen diselenide with meter-long distillation columns. And finally, one thing that is nice, that elemental selenium is a semi-metal, can be purified by the float-zone process. This is how you purify germanium, silicon. You can get something that is very, very pure. And so just to give you an idea of what a detector array of these things would look like, it's something like this. The idea is you get an 8-inch wafer, you make your pixel array, you deposit, say, 500 micron thick of selenium, you put a high voltage contact, then you put two of these things back to back, so it's a 1 millimeter thick device with hundreds of centimeter square imaging area. And then you would like to put, this is up to, we haven't decided this, but in principle, if you have CMOS technology, maybe you can put a lot of functionality on board, digitization, zero suppression, things like this, so you don't really need to read out this in such detail, right? It could be just its own little module that you download the data from. And just to give you an example of something that would be, say, of the same physics reach as Nexo, what you would need is about 160 kilogram target, 2,500 modules, about 75 meter square imaging area. So it's not something that is crazy. And of course, it runs at room temperature, so it's very nice. You just have to put it in a nice, clean vessel. You maybe want, you put high purity nitrogen to stop radon backgrounds, and it can perform very well. So we've done a simulation of something like this to see what type of backgrounds we would be able to achieve. Okay. So here is the simulation. So the simulation, which is reported in this paper in GINST, is we assumed a large array where you have a CMOS pixel array of 15 by 50 micrometer square pixel size, 10 electron noise per pixel, 70 decibel dynamic range. These are all pretty standard properties in a CMOS device, so this is not something that needs to be really a lot of R&D go into. And then the amorphous selenium, again, at the level of something that has been done 200 micron thick, 15 eV of energy to produce an electron hole pair, and then the Fano factor. And in the end, what you get is something that has the neutrinoless line will have a resolution of about 24 kV at full width have maximum. And the region of interest, the color doesn't come up. But at this level, you can choose a region of interest where the 2 neutrino double beta decay backgrounds are the order of 5 times 10 to the minus 9 per kilogram per year. And that is very nice because even in the worst case for neutrino Majorana mass of 1 milliEV, even a more conservative nuclear physics scenario, you're still an order of magnitude higher than the signal. But where this thing really shines is in terms of the background suppression. So the high spatial resolution of the imaging devices allows you for particle identification based on the topology of the ionization event. So alphas are very cleanly discriminated. But also the precise, knowing where the radioactive decay happens and having a solid state device, and this is something that we know very well from DAMIC, allows you to veto exceptionally well radioactive decays from uranium and thorium, either on the surfaces or in the bulk of the devices, okay? So when you're talking about, say, thorium-228, I mean, the only thing that can give you a background in the region of interest is thallium-228. But here, with an imaging device and high uptime, you can actually see a full 70 Ks before it. Okay, so even if you only have, you know, 1%, 99% efficiency of seeing one of these decays, you have seven of them. And then, you know, the discrimination power of things in the bulk on the surface is something like 10 to the 6 or more. And then finally is a nice, the feature of having single double electron discrimination. And this is important for two things. It's important because because this is coming from the gamma ray backgrounds. Okay, so when you don't have to worry about intrinsic contamination, then dominant thing are gamma rays coming from decays in the environment of your detector. If you can discriminate those by track topology, you really don't need to fiducialize. So that means when I'm talking about a 160 kilogram detector, that really is 160 kilograms helium 82. And maybe you can cut a few millimeters from the edge, but really it is. Most of it is fully active. You don't need to fiducialize to decrease the gamma ray backgrounds. So what we did is we ran the full simulation. We went ahead and tracked and produced two electrons from double beta decay, and then produced single electrons from gamma rays in the region of interest. And then we developed a very simple algorithm that, given the specs I gave you for the CMOS pixel array, you can, by identifying the higher stopping power at the ends, and the straggling, you can actually reject, you can spread the single electron background of 10 to the minus 3 with a 50% signal acceptance, okay? And by the way, just to point out, the colors here is the imager number. So this is a tower. So colors toward the red are higher stacks. So you're looking at a projection of these tracks in like slices, okay, in Z. And so the final point of the paper was this table that really, you know, we took reasonable contaminations for all parts of all ingredients that have already been achieved in enriched selenium, in, you know, contaminations for the CMOS pixel, from the pixel arrays of DAMIC surface dust and things of this sort, and then production by cosmogenics. And when you take all these things into account, note that first you start with a relatively low raw background rate because of the high Q value of selenium, but then when you apply the discrimination, it goes down to the level of 10 to the minus 6, okay? And so this is roughly where you want to be if you want to have a shot to start probing a normal hierarchy. So we started some R&D on this front, and this is actually a picture of the work we did last week at the University of Waterloo. Right now we have collaboration between Chicago, Princeton, University of Waterloo. These are two grad students working with me. That's me. And then not pictured are the professors that are helping this effort, which are Christian Galdi at Princeton, Professor Karima at University of Waterloo, and Paolo at the University of Chicago. So the first thing we're trying to do is to establish the energy response of the devices. So what we've built are selenium detectors, very simple pixel detectors, so it's just a selenium layer between two conductors where you apply high voltage, and then you connect the other electrode to a nice front end, commercial front end. And then what this is just a picture of the device that we built. And this is making a detector this small with a low capacitance and having a front end with very low noise will allow us to look with high resolution X-rays interactions and other or electron interactions inside the selenium and really measure for the first time very well its intrinsic properties, its energy response. Okay, so we built setups like this, and right now they've been distributed to Waterloo, Princeton, and Chicago. This was last week, and now early this week we got for the first single X-ray pulse that's ever been digitized in selenium. So this is from an americium 241 source, about 1,000 electrons. And the goal of this project is to decrease, so first to decrease the noise further to get really nice pulse shapes and perform a calibration campaign with X-rays. Now, one thing about the pulse height, this pulse analysis, is that the height gives you the number of charge carriers that are produced by the X-ray, but also the decay time tells you a lot about the charge transfer and trapping of the electrons and holes in the material. Okay, so our goal with this setup is do pulse analysis to understand the intrinsic properties of the charge generation and transport in amorphous selenium. I'm mentioning this because if you look at the literature, this is a material that hasn't been studied as much detail as silicon or germanium. So if you want to get to really make a highly performant CMOS device, then you want something, then you want to understand where the noise source is coming from and what the signal from the selenium is coming from. And of course, this is the issue about the CMOS implementation. So as I mentioned, Professor Karima Levine here at University of Waterloo have already been characterizing CMOS devices for imaging. So this is just a picture of the pixel arrays they build. This is a picture of the selenium layer on top. And then you can see here the pixel noise of this device. And the idea is to collaborate to bring these test devices and use them for particle detection. Okay? And as we understand better the response of amorphous selenium, we will provide feedback into seeing how to build better and highly performant devices. And then the other part is related to industry. So another thing is there's another company here in Waterloo that is actually building CMOS amorphous selenium devices for the medical industry. And they're actually about to release the Libra prototype, which is a very, very nice detector that has a lot of the properties that we already want, okay, for the nitrile dol beta decay experiment. It has a pixel size of about, you know, 8 by 8 micrometer squared, has a low detector node capacitance, nice conversion gain. It runs, you know, faster than we need to. And you know, it's already 100 microns thick. Okay, so maybe the only issue is that because this is a prototype, the area is not as large as the hundreds of centimeters squared that we want. But the company already is planning to release a detector that's already 15 by 15 centimeters squared next year. So they are moving very fast. And where they're going, where the industry is going, is precisely where you want to go for the nitrile dol beta decay program. Okay, so we're very eager to get our hands on these devices, test them in the lab as particle detectors, and really work toward a CMOS pixel array interface with selenium that has the performance required to get to the background level that our studies say it is possible. Okay, so here are my conclusions. So I think CMOS amorphous selenium technology could have the capability to reach backgrounds at the level that is necessary to probe the normal hierarchy. Most of the required specifications for the devices within academia and industry, I think, can be met in the next few years. I mean, there's only one or two challenges that need to be addressed, but overall, it actually, I think we're quite lucky that this is going on. And the existing capabilities in the industry will help with the scalability. The fact that these things are built in existing foundries with existing CMOS technology, the fact that there's an industry that already evaporates 1 millimeter thick amorphous selenium layers on large number of devices that go to X-ray machines all over the world is really something that we can piggyback on, okay? And then we have ongoing R&D to determine the intrinsic response of amorphous selenium to radiation, and then soon we'll start characterizing CMOS amorphous selenium devices in the lab. Thank you. People have done full-size spectroscopy with higher noise, so they feed the signal from MCA. Gotcha. But most of the work that has been done has been for imaging. You just select a large number of charge from many X-rays. So single X-ray is not that it's very common. So the noise here, we think we can get the noise about a factor, maybe an order of magnitude lower than this with the front end we have. And then we will really try to understand the energy scale and, you know, measure the final factor, technically, of this material and see if there's charge trapping and other phenomena. Okay.
Any other questions? All right, great, thanks, let's move on.